And now, a warrior for the Word of God and the Constitution of the United States, a Marine Corps veteran, a Harvard-trained attorney, Bishop of the Called Churches, and founder and president of STAND. Staying true to America's national destiny, the voice of the awakening, your host, Bishop E.W. Jackson.
And I am he. Great to be with you again today. Hope you had a wonderful weekend. Had a chance to get to church. I trust that your church is open and you were able to get there and actually worship live and in person with your fellow church members, your fellow Christians, and your pastor, and just able to enjoy a wonderful time of fellowship, and that you enjoyed the weekend in general, because we're back to Monday and we need that spiritual rejuvenation for the weekend, don't we? It's interesting. I preached this past Sunday part two of How to Save the Nation. And one of the things I'm addressing is, does the church have a responsibility to that? And sadly, many churches across the country think they don't. I believe that we do, because God speaks to the issue of nations so much in the Bible that there's no way, if he's concerned about the state of nations, there's no way that we as Christians can not be concerned about the state of our own nation. And so I believe we have a responsibility. The mission statement of our church has been boiled down to three very simple points: save souls, save families, save the nation. And we believe that those all go together, because if you have a nation that is trying to crush the gospel of Jesus Christ, you're going to have a much harder time saving souls. If you've got a nation that is dismantling the family, you're also going to have a much harder time saving souls. And if you got a nation that is going against God in general, you're going to have a hard time getting anything done in any prosperous, meaningful way. And so they all go together. And I must admit, I am a little frustrated with pastors and churches that think, I don't have anything to do with that. That's not my responsibility. No. We're just about saving souls. Well, I believe that all of those go together, and God speaks to all of them in his word, so I don't know how we can avoid them. The end of the book of Malachi says, God will turn the hearts of fathers to their children and the hearts of children to their fathers in the last days, lest he comes and smites the earth with a curse. Well, we are living in the last days, and you see what's happened. The hearts of fathers have turned away from their children, the hearts of children away from their fathers to a large extent, which is an interesting reflection, given the fact that we're coming right up on Father's Day here. And pastors think that they don't have any responsibility to address that. And that's been largely the result of policies engineered by the federal government that have disincentivized stability within families and incentivized men leaving the home and paying women to be single parent heads of households and take care of their children with government largesse. That has been an absolute disaster. By the way, I talk a little bit about this in an open letter to the black community. If you haven't seen that, you can check it out. I think it's on the Stand. I think it's on our Stand blog, if I'm not mistaken, here on AFR. I'm pretty sure it is. In fact, I'm going to be doing an interview with Tim tomorrow and the crew tomorrow at 11:30 Eastern Time, 10:30 Central Time, to talk about this, to talk about this very issue, and really to talk about the open letter. So if you're available for that, by all means, tune in to, what is that, Today's Issues? I think it is. Here on AFR at 11:30 a.m. Eastern or 10:30 a.m. Central, and I'll be going to talk about that issue. But my point is, you cannot have other parts of society working the way they're supposed to work while the nation falls apart spiritually and morally, and you can't have the nation, you can't have churches that think we can focus only on this one little part of our mission and ignore everything else because that doesn't matter. I think that's exactly why we are where we are now, in this horrible condition of spiritual and moral confusion in our country, precisely because too many churches have decided to abdicate their responsibility to impact the culture, to be salt and light in the entire culture. And we think that we can simply be myopic and focus only on one thing, personal salvation. I hope we're learning that that simply will not work. That just isn't enough. I'm trying to remember, my wife was telling me, or was I hearing this somewhere else, about somebody who sent their child off to college, and the child came back after the first year a different person. I can't tell you how many people have told me that personally, that, you know, Bishop, I sent my child off to college, and the person who came back, I don't even know. So that has to do with the state of the nation. That has to do with the state of the culture. So you raise your child as a Christian. You raise your child to believe in God. You raise your child with a biblical worldview, and then your child goes off to college and is told, well, don't believe that stupid stuff your parents told you and all that dumb Bible stuff. Come on. We have grown beyond that. We are more sophisticated and intelligent and intellectual than that. It's time to cast all of that antiquated nonsense aside. That's Neanderthal. That's prehistoric. Let's come into the modern world. We all know there's no God. We all know that we are evolved, and we all know that the only thing that really matters is social justice. And all that other stuff is just just stuff people make up. And your child comes back and you think, what in the world happened to the 18, 19 years of instruction and teaching? Well, it all got undermined. It all got swallowed up in what I call the cult of godlessness that has gripped our culture today. And it is cult-like. So we just need to continue to do what we know we are called to do, because I believe truth ultimately wins out. Truth has a power of its own that simply cannot be defeated. And we've just got to keep telling the truth. We just got to keep putting it out there. I mean, for example, the cure in the case of this instance of police brutality that George Floyd experienced and that caused his death, the cure is worse than the disease, because we've got lawlessness happening all over the country. Had somebody killed in Atlanta on Saturday night, very different situation. Person was drunk, fought the police, stole the taser, actually didn't, just basically wrestled the taser gun off of a police officer's body, tried to run, turn and fire the taser at him, gets shot and is killed. And suddenly, you know, this is another case of police brutality and injustice and racism. That bears no resemblance to the truth whatsoever. And let me just say to all the police officers who might be listening right now, we are praying hard for you, because your job has become exponentially more difficult than perhaps it's ever been at any time in the history of this country. You are now faced with a situation in which no matter what you do to defend your life or the lives of others, you run the risk of not only losing your job, but losing your freedom. And that is a burden that should not be put on the shoulders of any police officer. I can't imagine it, which is one of the reasons why I have such admiration for these folks, because I'll be honest with you all, I could not do it. I simply couldn't do it. I couldn't do a job where I'm told, if you mess up, you might not only get fired from your job, we may put you in an iron cage. You know what I'd say? That's okay. Appreciate the offer. Moving right along. God bless these courageous men and women who take that risk in our behalf. Back in a moment.
This is Viewpoints with Kirby Anderson.
George Floyd was killed 3 weeks ago, and protests have been with us since the video surfaced. You would think that some of the focus would be on who is responsible for his killing and the others like it in the city. Kevin Williamson says the answer to that question is not unknowable, but in many political quarters, unspeakable. There's a reason for that. Minneapolis is a Democratic city with a Democratic mayor and a Democratic city council that's in a state with a Democratic governor and Democratic state house. That is why the focus hasn't been on specific changes that should be made, but on abstractions that take the focus off politicians. But the city hasn't been governed by abstractions, but by real people. The most concrete proposal we have heard so far is to defund the police. Protesters in nearly every city have called for cutting or even eliminating the budgets of law enforcement. But most cities won't cut the police budget, except for the harsh reality that tax revenues might be less because of the pandemic lockdown. In the end, though, defund the police may be merely another abstraction. A more reasonable solution is to abolish or reform police unions. John Fund documents how these unions protect bad cops. One retired NYPD commander writes that police unions in New York City outright protect cops. An article in the Stanford Law Review documents how police unions shield their members from public accountability. The former Minneapolis police officer who held his knee on George Floyd's neck had 18 prior complaints. One of the officers who stood by and did nothing had 6 complaints, one still open and another lawsuit settled by the city. This would be a good place to start by focusing on the reality rather than talking about abstractions. I'm Kirby Anderson, and that's my point of view.
Take Kirby and the Point of View team with you on the go with the Point of View app. Search for Point of View Radio at the Apple or Google Play stores.
Well, these are certainly tough, tough times, aren't they? Hi, it's Michael Woolworth with Bible League International, engaging the world with God's Word for more than 80 years at only $5 a Bible. You know, I'm grateful that God has given Bible League a platform for more than 8 decades to address the other pandemic, and that's the shortage of Bibles all over the world in places like Asia, Africa, the Middle East, and Latin America. In fact, at Bible League, we determined that as few as 1 Christian in 10 has a Bible. What's that mean? That during this pandemic, many evangelical Christians elsewhere in the world cannot open their Bible and be reminded of God's promises, like 1 Peter 5:7, cast your cares on Him, for He cares for you. But you know, during this time of sheltering in place, we can shelter in grace. Learn how you can be a blessing to believers around the world praying for a Bible by visiting sendbiblesnow.org. That's sendbiblesnow.org, or by calling Bible League at 800-YES-WORD, 800-YES-WORD.
Back to the Awakening with Bishop E.W. Jackson on American Family Radio.
And we're back. A close colleague of mine and friend and really spiritual son in the ministry out in Little Rock, Arkansas, was supposed to be speaking at a rally for the president out there, and they had to cancel the rally because of threats of violence. And the threats of violence, by the way, weren't coming from the quote-unquote the right-wing extremists. It was Antifa and Black Lives Matter and all of that. They were threatening violence. And they canceled the event because they knew that if violence broke out, the president and his supporters would be blamed. And so they just canceled the event. So we're dealing, as I've said before, with a totalitarian culture in which the truth doesn't matter. Facts and information don't matter. The only thing that matters is that you shut down anybody who does not agree with this left-wing narrative, and you punish those who dare to contradict it, and you basically only allow those statements, that information, that supports your narrative to be heard. And this is a very, very dangerous moment for our country. And as I've said before, somebody wrote me a letter, in fact, calling attention to the fact that I'd said this. We're dealing with people, sadly, in our own country. You know, it's one thing to deal with citizens who fundamentally agree that America is a wonderful place, but that we've got some problems that we need to solve and we need to come together and figure out how to work that out. Now, we're dealing with a set of people in our country now who hate this country, and they don't believe in anything it stands for, and they have no respect for any of our symbols, any of our institutions, anything that knits us together as a nation. And they don't respect our First Amendment. They don't respect our Second Amendment, except when they're exercising their Second Amendment rights, by the way. I've been told that the autonomous zone out in Seattle has armed guards patrolling their quote-unquote borders. Now, ain't that a kicker? You know, the people who've been telling us, we don't need borders, and anybody who wants to come in should be able to come in. All of a sudden, borders have become very important. And the people who tell us guns are dangerous, guns are the problem, we got to get guns away from people, they're using guns to guard their borders. Their hypocrisy knows no bounds. I was watching, in fact, actually my wife pointed it out to me, because my weekends, as you all can imagine, are really actually fairly busy. I don't relax on weekends because I've got churches to preach at. And this particular weekend, I was in Boston on Saturday and then back in Virginia on Sunday. But my wife pointed out the Mark Levin's program, and that he had a professor on there who has written a book called The Hate Crime Hoax. His name is Dr. Wilfred Riley from Kentucky State University, their political science department. And he was sharing some statistics about the facts. And I've been saying this all along. It is not popular to say in many circles. And I suppose if I worked in the corporate world or if I worked, in some sort of institution that has bought into the political correctness, whether true or not, like for a sports network, like the guy who got fired from ESPN for saying every life matters, every single one. You can't say that. All lives matter. You can't say that. You get fired for that. Actually fired from your job for telling the truth. And the truth is that all lives matter. But the truth doesn't matter. Well, as Dr. Wilfred Riley pointed out, one of the facts, one of the very unpopular facts. And I can say this as an American of African descent, and I say it without apology, and I say it without equivocation. The reason why there is so much interaction between the black community and black young men and the police is that the crime level in these communities is so much higher. Now, why doesn't somebody say, stop committing crimes? 52% of the murders that happen in our country are committed by 6% of the population, which is young black men. And of course, they're killing other black men. But 52% of the murders committed by 6% of the population. Don't you think that that's going to lead to the police having a lot more interaction with the people who live in those communities? Well, of course it does. Of course it does. Don't you think that's going to lead to a disproportionate number of arrests in those communities? Well, if it didn't, the police wouldn't be doing their jobs. I mean, come on, we're not stupid. And that's not racist to say that. It's simply the truth. And of course, the problem is that you have so few in these communities with the courage to say that, which then to me leads to an actual potential solution, which is we need to, as a community, come against the culture of death. We need to end this nonsense. Snitches get stitches. We need to end this nonsense. The police are the enemy. The drug dealer is with us. He's killing your children. He's killing your family members who don't go along. The gang members are terrorizing your streets. But oh, no, we can't say anything about that. Because the police are the enemy. He's pointing out 2.4% more crime within the black community than in the population at large. 2.4 times more crime. I mean, folks, that's 250%. That's almost 250% more crime. And I think this is 2019. This is 2019 data. Non-unarmed black men killed by police. 56 total unarmed people killed by police. Of the 56 total unarmed people killed by police, and by the way, we know unarmed is an elastic idea, because unarmed, for example, you could argue that this gentleman who was killed in Atlanta was unarmed, but he fought the cop, took his taser, and then fired it at him. So some people would argue, well, he was unarmed. He didn't have a gun. Well, the cop didn't know what he had. He turned and pointed an instrument at him, and the taser does look like a gun, pointed it at him. And, you know, you don't get to go sit on your couch and think for 10 minutes about how you're going to respond. These are life or death situations. 1,000 people approximately, if this data, 1,000 people killed by police. By the way, again, the overwhelming majority of those people, far more of those people killed are Americans of European descent than Americans of African descent. 229 were black. But 7,000 plus young black men are killed every single year in violence across the country. So you tell me, if black lives really matter, why aren't we addressing that? Well, because that's not acceptable. You simply can't bring that up. And in the meantime, this lawless group of rioting, looting, destroying, murdering thugs, and yeah, they are thugs. The people doing that are thugs. Hey, come on, who are we kidding? You shouldn't call them thugs. Well, what are they then? Upstanding citizens? And they're killing mainly other black people. So what are we supposed to, what are they? The folks who are doing this stuff are not doing it to advance any decent cause, because you can't advance any decent cause that way. You can't advance the cause of justice. You can't advance the cause of righteousness. You can't advance the cause of peace. You can't advance any cause that way. In fact, I have to tell you all, I am personally offended. I am personally incensed by the fact that they desecrated the Philadelphia Tomb of the Unknown Soldier of the American Revolution. And beside George Washington's statue, wrote, "committed genocide." Now, I personally take umbrage at that. George Washington didn't commit genocide on anybody at any time under any circumstance. George Washington is one of the most honorable figures in American history. You know, there's this debate, who was the greatest president? Was it George Washington or Abraham Lincoln? And I always say, although I take nothing away from Abraham Lincoln, I believe George Washington was the greatest president we had, because were it not for George Washington, I don't believe we'd ever had a country. Abraham Lincoln certainly held the country together, but I believe without George Washington, there wouldn't have been a country to hold together. George Washington is one of my personal heroes, because unlike most people of his day, and unlike most people of any day, the man didn't grasp power. He wasn't hungry to get control over people and dictate. He wanted to serve, and he wanted to assure liberty for his fellow citizens. And when he had a chance to be a king, he roundly and soundly rejected it and said, "That's not what I'm here for." And when he finished his task of winning the Revolutionary War, he went home and did not come back until he was called into service by his country, something he was reluctant to do, but he felt like he had to do it, and set the precedent as president that created the most stable country in the history of mankind, a constitutional republic unlike any other that's ever existed. And they want to desecrate his statue. See, this is what I mean about tearing these statues down. It's about more than the Confederacy. Back in a moment.
It's my turn.
Here is your host for My Turn, Don Wildman.
Robert E. Lee was a Southern general during the war between the states. Most of us know that from the history books which we have read. But often the history books fail to tell us much about the personal lives of famous people. Years after the war had ended, Robert E. Lee was sitting on his porch one day in his rocking chair. The years had taken their toll on him, and his health was fast failing. While there on the porch, he was approached by two men who came from the Louisiana Lottery. They came to make him a proposition. Their proposition would have made Lee a rich man. He listened carefully as they laid out their plans, but he found it hard to believe what he heard. So, Lee asked the men to repeat their offer again, thinking perhaps he had not understood their offer. Again, they made their pitch. The men didn't want Lee to invest any money. All they wanted was the use of his name for promotional purposes to use in their lottery. And just for the use of his name, they promised to make him rich. Lee stood up, rising slowly. He balanced himself on his crutches. He stood erect, looked the men in the eye, and with the courage and conviction that made him great, he spoke some hot-tempered words. "Gentlemen," he said, "I lost my home in the war. I lost my fortune in the war. I lost everything I had in the war except my name. My name is not for sale. And if you don't get out of here at once, I will hit you in the head with my crutch." Anger. We have tended to associate it with wrong. We have forgotten that there is such a thing as righteous indignation. Holy anger. Most folks think that when you get angry, it's the devil which causes you to do so. I would guess that most of the time it is the devil which causes you to get angry. But often anger is the evidence of the love of God in one's heart. The carpenter went into the temple courtyard one day, saw what had happened there, saw how something intended for good had been turned into something evil, and he became very angry because of it. His holy anger, righteous indignation, caused him to turn over the tables of the money changers and then gave him the courage to run some folks out of the temple. What many folks call tolerance, others call cowardice. Often when no anger boils up within us at the sight of wrong, it is simply because we've gotten to the place where we don't care. Wrong wouldn't stand much of a chance in our world if we could muster enough of this holy anger, this righteous indignation. Too often we've been told that what we should do is rid ourselves of anger. What we need to learn to do is not to rid ourselves of anger, but to harness this God-given emotion, to channel it for good purposes. You see, sometimes the tables need to be turned over.
This has been My Turn with Don Wildman, a production of the American Family Association.
Back to The Awakening with Bishop E.W. Jackson on American Family Radio.
And we're back, and the insanity continues. And you just have to step back and look at it and kind of shake your head at it, but stand in awe at the accuracy, the absolute accuracy of the Word of God. Because the Word of God predicts all of this. I mean, in the last days, perilous times will come. We are in perilous times. And you just go right down the list, and everything the Bible essentially says is going to happen is exactly what is happening. And we here at this network, and each of you as Christians, has just got to just stand up and be a herald of truth. We just don't have any choice. I don't know whether you all had an opportunity to see this or not. I like Dan Bongino. He's another person I want to get on the program sometime, but I like him. And he's a very articulate spokesperson for conservative values. And he said something this morning that just really sent chills down my spine. He didn't go into details, but apparently there was some issue where his children were kind of approached and maybe inappropriately as a result of his strong stands. And he said, you know, I'm not going to go into it and make, and you know, try to make this, you know, some sort of dramatic thing. He said, but it, I think the phrase he used was, it chilled me to the bone. And he said, folks, make no mistake about it. This is coming to your doorstep. And I thought, wow. I didn't get a chance to follow through, but I glanced every now and then because I'm busy doing other things. I glanced every now and then and saw people responding and commenting about that remark. It's coming to your doorstep. And I, look, and here again, I don't want to be dramatic either. I don't want to in any way incite anyone to overreact to anything, okay? Let's just make that clear. But the craziness does give you pause. When you hear that people are going on private property to burn people's flags, and you hear that in the autonomous zone, did you all hear that this American of African descent was flying a flag and walking around with the flag, and they called him a traitor, an American flag. They called him a traitor and attacked him. They wanted him out of the autonomous zone. So the autonomous zone then is an anti-American zone. And if you love your country, you are not welcome there because the people there hate America. Now, who would have thought that you'd be in a situation where Americans get together to denounce their own country and denounce anyone who expresses any love, affection, good feelings about the United States of America? Who would have thought? But that's where we are. And how do you reach compromise with that? Well, I'll love America less. You hate America less, and maybe we'll meet somewhere in the middle. I mean, that doesn't work, does it? I mean, that just will not work. So one has to wonder. I was talking to a friend of mine this morning who lives in a very remote part of Virginia. The area of Virginia is not remote. I mean, there's really no part of Virginia that's remote, but lives in a remote part of Virginia in a rural community. So where he lives is in a rural county, but his particular homestead is remote. You can't pass by it going on your way somewhere else. Okay. You know, you've got to be going there. And, you know, he was saying when somebody knocks on my door or somebody comes up on my porch, he said, I'm on the alert because you can't stumble up on my house. Okay. You've got to be coming here. And since it is so remote, why would you be coming here if you weren't invited? And because, you know, they were encouraging the rioters. They have been encouraging the rioters to get out beyond the inner cities and go out into the suburbs and go out into the more rural areas. And in other words, take your fight out into the hinterlands. And you just, you know, you listen to this stuff and you just, Lord, have mercy on us. Have we actually degenerated that far? And the answer is yes, we have, because folks, there's no limit to the depths of depravity to which people will sink when they don't have God. Now, that's just the fact of the matter is. So I would say the Bible says, be at peace insofar as it lies with you, right? Be at peace with all people. But I'd say you got to be ready these days because you just never know when you see people behaving the way folks are behaving today. And that's a sad commentary. I want to see this ended. My vision for America is that we be a place where all of us respect one another, where the color of our skin does not matter to any of us. The only thing that matters is that we're Americans and we try to treat one another decently. And of course, the people who don't want to treat somebody decently. Those people we deal with, if they're committing crimes, we deal with those people however we need to through the process of criminal justice, regardless of the color of their skin. But as for the rest of us, we treat each other decently. We're fellow Americans. We're part of the same country. We want to live at peace with one another. We want to raise our families. We want to get a good education for our children. We just want the very best for everybody. And my vision for America is that that's the way we live. We believe in family. We believe in hard work. We believe in personal responsibility. We're not looking for others to blame for our own shortcomings. We're trying to work to improve ourselves and get better in terms of our own character and our own competence and what we want to do in life. And we're just busy trying to live the great life and fulfill the great opportunity and possibility that we're offered in this very unique experiment we call the United States of America. As opposed to having these people who want to tear this country apart. Let me see if I can get, oh my goodness gracious, folks, I have been on a run. So let me see if I can get your calls in here even before we have to go to our next break. The number is 888-589-8840. That's 888-589-8840. You know, one of the things that I find most troubling about this whole thing is that we have people in office who don't seem to grasp the fact that the people that they are supporting don't care about any kind of decency and order. In other words, they don't really care about elective office. I don't think they ultimately care about elections, except insofar as they are a stepping stone to what they really want, which is a totalitarian system. What they want is to choose leaders who can stay in office for life and get us all straightened out. Do you all remember that Woody Allen, not only Woody Allen, but a number of Hollywood people said, you know, it would be great if Barack Obama could just be president until he got the whole thing straightened out. Yeah, they want a totalitarian dictator. They want somebody. They want a strong man, which is, look, talk about the spirit of the Antichrist. That is exactly how he comes to power. He comes to power telling people, I can solve the problems. I am your answer. All you've got to do is turn everything over to me and worship me as your savior, your leader, and all will be well. And that's the spirit of the age that we are in. That's exactly where we're going. Bow down and show obeisance. And you've got people in office, people who have built businesses, people with wealth who don't understand, people who are teachers and professors and intellectuals who are going along with all this who don't understand, they're going to be the first to go. They will be the first to go. it's an amazing thing to witness that these people have no clue what side their bread is buttered on. As one friend of mine says, you know, they're really too dumb to come in out of the rain. Back in a moment.
I believe that our plans are actually really often short-sighted.
Jen Weaver on Focus on the Family Minute.
So we're looking for the fairy tale moment. We're looking for the thing that we thought it was going to be in our specific timeline with our specifics and the type of house and the number of kids and all of these things, which aren't bad things, but that oftentimes God wants to replace our plan with his plan. And so we need to lean into what he's doing. What is God saying about this? How is he leading us? And sometimes the whole fairy tale thing actually limits what we're able to receive from our spouses and from our marriage because we're looking for the fluffy things. We're looking for the Christmas holiday movie special instead of leaning in to be with each other and for each other in the hard times and learning how to grow together through difficulty and be there as a team instead of the fluffy ball gowns.
Trust in God's plan for your relationship instead of your fairy tale expectations. More from Jen at familyminute.org.
I'm Franklin Graham. Right now, our country is in trouble, and people are scared, people are afraid, and we see the violence and the injustices that are taking place. Only God can change this. This is a problem of the human heart.
If you'd like to pray with someone, call us any time of the day or night at 888-388-2683. 888-388-2683.
Call that number right now. We've got someone who will pray with you, talk with you, encourage you. God bless.
This is Chris Katulka of the Friends of Israel Today radio program, and I want to encourage you to join us this weekend. We're going to be continuing our Encountering Jesus series. We're going to be looking at the life of Jesus as he ministered one-on-one to individuals. And this week, it's the woman at the well. We're going to see the power of Christ's forgiveness, his reconciliation, how he invites us to worship in spirit and in truth. You can listen on this station or connect with us at foiradio.org.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. We've seen God open up so many doors for us to help serve and love those who get affected by a natural disaster.
As the trees and the wind started crashing down around us, my wife was, of course, very diligently praying, you know, Lord, please be with us.
Very simply, we do it because God commands us to love others.
I see these volunteers all as a gift from God.
And I'm just grateful they're here, you know, helping out. It's a blessing.
If you're interested in becoming a part of what God's doing through 8 Days of Hope, please go to 8daysofhope.com, click on Get Involved, submit your email address.
I've noticed that whenever there's a time in my life when things might be a little gloomy, the number one thing that I can do is to go serve somebody.
And I would encourage anyone else to, it's worth it. Come out and do it next time if you didn't make it to this one. And the Father will really bless you in it.
Thank you so much for your prayers and volunteering with 8 Days of Hope.
Back to the Awakening with Bishop E.W. Jackson on American Family Radio.
Two other quick things. Julian Keene, 30 years old, Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Officer, on his way responding to a hit-and-run car crash while off-duty in LaBelle, Florida, 50 miles north of Cape Coral, Florida, just trying to be of help, shot dead, assassinated. Three suspects are in custody. He happens to be an American of African descent, or black, as one would call it. Does his life matter? Apparently not, because he's an officer of the law. But his life matters to me, because he's an American. Maybe we need a new movement. American Lives Matter. One other quick thing. Apparently, Bikers for Trump are heading to Seattle to confront the autonomous zone. That should be an interesting confrontation. You know, I think the people in the autonomous zone, when the bikers show up, they maybe better take a vacation from the autonomous zone. I'm just saying, folks. The number is 888-589-8840. All right, let's thank you all for your patience. Let's come to your calls. We've got Suzanne in Oklahoma, or Susan in Oklahoma. Susan, welcome.
Hello, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm fine, and I always enjoy your program.
Thank you.
I have a comment. It's about those little cameras that the policemen have to wear, and I think the butchers should have to wear them too. And by butchers, I mean the abortionists. I don't believe they show all the footage for the policemen, and I don't think they'd have to show all the footage for the moms, but I think, you know, maybe for the mother's protection and maybe for humanity and kindness, people should see what they're doing every day too.
Susan, couldn't agree with you more, and the abortion industry doesn't want that, because then you see the ugliness and the butchery, as you put it, the utter depravity of what they do, and they want to keep it clean and pristine. Oh, it's really nothing. No, it is definitely something. So, Susan, that's a good suggestion, but you can rest assured Planned Parenthood is not having any of that. Thanks for the call, Susan. Appreciate it. Let's go to Patrick in Alabama. Patrick, welcome.
Yes, I've told the gentleman that answered, I'm a 77-year-old white male. My daddy and my family has always lived around black folks. We call them colored folks back then. We've always been friends with them. I've been in a relationship with them, working with them. I've always loved them. Never had any problem. I never knew what racism or anything like that was about. My mother used to send us kids to this old Uncle John, black fella that lived across the street with food. I worked with guys that I loved, and to this day I miss them and I think about them. Mm-hmm. And it hurts me to hear folks want to label me as a racist because I don't think a certain way. But that's not right. I'm not a racist, and I love this country, and I hate to see what's happening to it and it being torn down. And I really do appreciate what you've had to say about it. It makes me feel good to know that there's somebody out there like you that's saying what you're saying, and I appreciate that a whole lot.
Well, Patrick, I appreciate your call and appreciate your sentiment. I tell you, before the left made relationships so complicated, and of course we're not denying that there was injustice that was done in the past or that it can still happen today. I think a lot more is made of racial injustice than should be, but injustice can happen in all kinds of ways today. We know that because we're not perfect people. But we've made even personal relationships between people. We've tried to politicize those. And the fact of the matter is we should just deal with one another, human being to human being. And that's what you were trying to do, Patrick. God bless you. Thank you for the call. Let's go to Vincent in Oklahoma. Vincent, welcome.
Yes, Bishop Jackson, I'm just reading a page here, you know, when you were talking about people destroying statues. I'm going to just read you a little, I'm going to go as fast as I can. It says, Thomas Jefferson knew the action made the man. He managed more than 10,000 acres as a farmer. He became a surveyor and a successful land speculator. He owned a profitable nail factory. He was an extraordinary horseman. He was an accomplished architect. He founded the University of Virginia, designed the campus, hired the professors, wrote the curriculum. He was respected and published naturalist, horticulturist, and meteorologist. He was a chess player, an accomplished singer, and a violin player. He is believed to have owned a Stradivarius. He was the president of the American Philosophical Society for 20 years, as well as a regent and alumnus of William and Mary. He was a diligent correspondent, and more than 28,000 of his letters survived. He was fluent in Latin, Greek, French, and Italian. He studied Anglo-Saxon, German, American, Indian dialects.
Vincent, I think we've got it. And you're right. None of that matters. None of that matters, Vincent, because Thomas Jefferson owned slaves, and we're to dismiss any contribution he might have made to life, to this country's founding, to anything, because he is to be dismissed because he owned slaves. And, you know, folks, it's absurd because Thomas Jefferson, and by the way, Thomas Jefferson is not one of my favorite founding fathers. I really appreciate him because the Declaration of Independence to me is a brilliant document. But Thomas Jefferson is not one of my favorite founding fathers, and I've got a number of reasons for that. But one of them is, you know, he got all caught up with the French Revolution, which was a brutal, bloody thing. And he really had romanticized that. And I thought he wasn't seeing that very, very clearly at the time. But to deny that the man made an extraordinary contribution to the world and to our country is just plain stupid. And yet, that's what we're told we're supposed to do. So, Vincent, you just laid out his many accomplishments. He was indeed a Renaissance man, brilliant in so many ways. And here again, he's one of those indispensable people who I think without him, we might not have had the Declaration of Independence or the document that sort of knit everybody together and brought everybody together to stand up against England. So thanks for the call, Vincent. Let's go to Byron in Tennessee. Byron, welcome. Byron, you're on.
Yeah, I'm here. You covered so many subjects. I guess on that last point, but there are statues of Confederate soldiers who are reprehensible, who didn't do great things, who need to be torn down, that are in the state houses of our country.
Tennessee. Well, let me just say this, Byron, hold on. I agree with you. They need to be, if they're to be moved, they need to be moved in an orderly, lawful fashion with the community as unified as can be around doing that, not defaced and torn down and ripped apart and all of that. Because here again, all you're doing is sowing the seeds of division. So with that one little interlineation there, I agree with you. So Byron, go ahead.
Yeah, and so, I mean, the Constitution allows when over all the years, the state legislators have resisted orderly removal, then it becomes incumbent upon us to do otherwise, because resisted orderly removal.
Okay. Go ahead, Byron. I want you to be able to finish. Oh, boy, I'm running short on time. Byron, real quickly, because I don't want to cut you off, but finish your thought.
Okay. And on the subject of black men killing each other, yes, that's why many ministers in the black community have tried to advocate for stricter control on guns so that we can try to get guns out of the hands of young black men, so that there's not as much killing among young black men.
By the way, they're killing each other. They have strict gun control in England. You know what they kill each other with there? Knives. Major problem with knife killing. See, killing is in the heart of a person, Byron. It's not in the instrument. So you take away one instrument, they find another to do it. But Byron, thank you for the call. You and I aren't going to agree on the lawlessness, because I think lawlessness breeds lawlessness. And once you start down that road, there simply is no return. So I don't think we ever ought to be removing any of these statues. That's what the political system is for. You debate and you argue and you keep pressing, and you simply don't give up until you get what you think is right and you convince enough people to go along with you. And eventually, I think you come with a peaceful outcome as opposed to what we've got now, which is violence being stoked. So I agree with you. And by the way, you're right. My view is, look at these Confederate statues for each person that you're talking about. Because I didn't mention this to you. I'm reading the biography of Stonewall Jackson right now, Thomas Jackson. And it's amazing. It's fascinating. I mean, this was a very, very decent man. I think he was on the wrong side of history, but he was a very, very decent man. And so to try to turn everybody into a monster because they fought on the side of the Confederacy, I think is wrong. And as I pointed out before, part of the point of doing this sort of acknowledgement of the bravery of some of these folks was to try to bring the country together after a vicious division, because we wanted to be one nation under God. You couldn't just point your finger at the other side and say, you bunch of vicious, nasty, evil. We wanted to knit the country together. But I would agree. Fort Bragg is named after a general. I couldn't find anybody, the Confederate side or the Union side, who thought that General Braxton Bragg was anybody to brag about. So, you know, I think there is a point to be made there. But let that be discussed and debated and decided on an educated basis, not on the basis of anger and bitterness and hatred, as if tearing down a Confederate statue is going to improve anybody's life. It's not going to improve the life of one black child, one black family, one black business. It's not going to improve anybody's life. It's a symbolic gesture. Fine, have at it through the process that we provide for making these decisions. But in the end, when you've gotten that done, guess what? Nothing substantive will have changed. And we got to ultimately get to the substance of solving these problems, not pontificating and posturing about them. And in the meantime, remember, we cannot be defeated if we will not quit, because we are on God's side.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.